wasn't happy with an opposition to whatever the current dominant philosophy was at the administration or whoever administration was. So my experiences might kind of shed some light on why you don't have a report that's complete and why they're not giving you access to non-secret information to any of the safeguards that you think might exist don't exist there. I think that involvement with the JTTF is wrong, and that should be, you should reconsider that. If there's a terrorist threat in Portland, it's the FBI's obligation to notify you. They would have to do that whether you were members or not. If they knew of a threat, they would have to take action. And if it was a local issue only, you would have to take action, but they'd have to communicate. So there's no need for this JTTF. Everybody does their job right. We should all be safe. I thank you for your time. It's actually been a pleasure. This is my first council hearing. I think you guys are great, and I just appreciate your opportunities here.
Thank you.
Come on, Jason. I wasn't next, but I'll start.
You, Councilor.
Okay. This is Jason Kafori, an attorney, and also speak on behalf of the Oregon Progressive Party. I think Commissioner Fritz started the conversation off correctly. Why can't she know, and why can't we know what's really going on underneath this cloak of secrecy? Another question that jumps to mind that hasn't been debated and wasn't really part of this, what have we gained as a city by being a member of the JTTF? Nothing has been illustrated for us, nothing in this report, about the benefits to us as a community over the last 2 years since we joined. A lot of speakers have pointed out we have no idea what's going on. We don't know how many cases are being involved. We don't know how many hours as citizens. And we don't know what type. They just say we're doing an investigation and it involves terrorism. Well, is it an Occupy person? We have no idea what the context is. And as the city council, I think you guys have a right to demand, let's have an identification of at least what type of investigation. Who is this person with? What is their organization? What is the structure? And we have nothing as a community. Now, before we joined the JTTF, some of you may not know this, but we did depositions in Joe Walsh's case on a false arrest claim, and we found out by deposing the head of the Portland Police's Criminal Intelligence Unit that the Criminal Intelligence Unit went undercover to peaceful demonstrations and dressed as plain-clothed people at those demonstrations. We, as the public, didn't know that. It took a deposition of a CIU head person to find that out. You, some of the members of City Council, may not know that happens. So that happened before we joined the JTTF. Now we're part of the JTTF, and we have no idea what's happening. Basic message here, trust us. We're following the law. Well, apparently an independent evaluation was written by the city attorney, who we heard from. Why is that not public? What is the reason that if they wrote a thing saying, yes, we are following the law here, that we, the community, can't look at that and say, okay, here's what exactly happened, and here's why they're following the law? It's 100% just trust us and give a stamp of approval. And that's not what City Council, in this context, in such an important issue to our civil liberties and our rights as a community, should be. Just a couple quick points. The one chance that the FBI had in the last year to show who are their informants, how do they conduct business, what is really happening, was the public trial of Muhammad. And what did they do? We, the community, and Muhammad as the defendant, never got to find out who these informants were. The top secret clearance for the police chief, according to this, he doesn't have it. He doesn't know who the informants are. We have no idea how the FBI is operating on this and what's really happening. Bottom line, democracy ends where secrecy begins. And we don't have control as citizens over our police, and we certainly don't have control of the FBI. Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you, Councilor Kafuri. My name is Charles Johnson. I'm a little bit distressed that the Chief of Police, Mike Reese, is not here to get live input from the citizens at this time after delivering such a despicable, incomplete report to you. And so I think it's important that we say Steve Novick, Amanda Fritz, Charlie Hales, Dan Saltzman, Nick Fish. We, the people, elected you to be mature, responsible adults who demand responsibility from your underlings. You're not doing that. What you are supposed to do is say, This report is inadequate. It's a bunch of baloney. We don't need the JTTF. That's all you need to do. You could actually stop my testimony right now and say the JTTF doesn't need to be in Portland. It's a thespian organization. It put on a show leading mentally ill young kids into doing fake bombings. We do not need the JTTF. That's all that's going on here. There is terrorism in the world. There is danger. The police and the FBI can handle it without partying around telling you, if you play this JTTF game, we'll give you some extra money. You look like prostitutes and whores taking money for a JTTF program and smearing it around the police department just so you can say, we're placating the FBI and keeping the people safe. That is not happening. We are having a shell game. Money from the feds comes around and goes in and out under different names. Portland will get the same amount of federal money whether you tell the JTTF to go down the toilet or not. Your job is to be mature, responsible leaders of this community and just say, no, we do not need the JTTF. Also, the report should talk about, if you were going to keep it, it should have a report that says, the feds moved this much money into the Portland city budget and paid for this many police hours. They're never going to do that. They're secrecy-happy, paranoid freaks who are getting money from you. That's all that's going on here. It's that simple. It was nice to sit beside the younger Kafuri, but I believe it's his father, had it right. We just don't need it. Stop. Do the right thing by your citizens. Have confidence in the ability of the police and the FBI to keep us safe without this silly little thing. There's a reason it's called the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Its purpose is to terrorize certain people. The government put young people in solitary confinement torture cells. We don't know how much Amanda Marshall was involved in that, but for many months they kept young anarchist people who had black clothes and computers in solitary confinement torture cells across the border in the state of Washington. We probably were dirtied by that. Katie Olesnik, Maddie Pfeiffer, Maddie O, those people are probably involved in this JTTF crap. That's why it's a whitewash report. You people should be able to get specific answers about that. If the police won't do that, you need to tell them, sorry, we're not financing or sanctioning this game. Thank you very much. Please do the right thing.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Teresa Roberts. Before I begin, I would like to thank the young students who came to testify about youth fairs. And I would like to congratulate them on their self-control in not pointing out that while their fairs were being cut, TriMet CEOs and executive staff voted themselves raises. It's unconscionable. And that to begin my part. Mayor Hales, Commissioner Novick, Hajime Mashite, Dozo Yoroshiku. Amanda Fritz, I call you sensei, and I tell you, gambatte. You're doing the right thing. Fight for us. You're the only person on council that I know I can trust. Although you're on the wrong side on fluoride. I believe it's an honest mistake. You had just come back from Europe, and you didn't realize that democracy was being subverted on your watch. And as soon as you realized what that council was doing, Jacques, you called it out. And for that, I compliment you. I also compliment you for calling attention to the travesty of Mike Reese's Joint Terrorism Task Force report. I'd like to follow Dan Handelman's points, and I would also like to talk about what has happened to my friends. On Dan's point number one, after stating how revealing and how many cases the Bureau has helped the JTTF investigation may compromise their investigation, it makes no sense. The chief says the Bureau has worked on at least one domestic terrorism case. Please correct me if I'm wrong. You'll remember last year I presented to you the Oregon Corruption Risk Scorecard. Sorry, you weren't here for that. And on that report card, Oregon got an F in public access to information. So if anything I say is incorrect, please do stop me. But in looking at things that make no sense, I'm called to mind that this is the same cop who lied, saying an Occupy event disrupted a 911 rape call and was later forced to recant. And looking at Dan's point number four, questioning the level of clearances. I want to remind you that this is a cop who confused us all in 2011 with a hazy mayoral bid. I also want to remind our current mayor that our former mayor got thrown under the bus by the feds, who claimed that they told Portland police to go easy on Occupy, and basically threw our mayor under the bus after he had cooperated with them, which the Republicans later took the story coming out of Portland and spun it to say that Obama was easy on terrorism. So you can see that article in the Oregonian. I found it most edifying to just go in and look at all the documents on Mike Rees. I highly recommend, if you haven't been following that, that you do. It's quite entertaining reading. All my life, I have worked. I was lucky because I grew up in higher socioeconomic circles and went to private schools. I never had to ride public transportation. We had maids. Security guarded our home during the civil rights movement and our neighborhood because of fear of riots. I grew up to teach. I grew up to volunteer. I grew up to be an artist. I'm now a mother and a grandmother. I'm highly educated. I have a high IQ. I believe our city attorney and our council members likely also have high IQs. However, I'm painfully aware, thanks to Michael Moore's documentaries and such, that this is not true of our police departments, which function with an IQ range of 85 to 120. Now, the idea of someone with an IQ of 85, a badge, and a gun in combination frightens me. What could go wrong? And we promote from within. So ultimately, my fear is we have no one with an IQ higher than 120 to run the department. Last year, as a member of Occupy, watching my fellow activists who are students, teachers, social workers, nurses, I watched them get pepper sprayed. I watched them get hit. I don't go to those marches as a general rule. I watch and cower from home, fully coerced by our police department and the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
Let me ask you to wrap up soon, okay?
What I am saying is that I would like to, I used to be very angry at Mike Rees, but now I consider the possibility that he really is doing the best he can with his IQ. Not to insult him, because I don't know his IQ. So, but I know we have limits on them. We don't have limits on you. I'm very impressed that our city attorney is extremely intelligent. I am not comfortable with them being the only ones with access to information or having a higher security clearance than you. I believe the only thing we get out of JTTF is that they militarize our police. We do not need our police militarized. We do not need them being held to lower standards than the Geneva Convention. And we do not need our police department turning it into the NYPD with offices in England and Israel and having incredible problems with constant stop and frisk, especially of minority populations.
Thanks very much. Thanks for coming. Thank you.
Our next two are Sarah Hobbs and Nancy Newell, and that's all who signed up.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Hobbs, and I'm a member of our local Veterans for Peace, Portland Chapter 72. And something I wanted to touch on has actually been touched on, but I wanted to elaborate. And that is often how investigations into terrorism are often used against progressives. I myself personally have been out on the street marching in actions and looked up and seeing that I've gotten my, literally having my picture taken by Portland Police and Department of Homeland Security personnel. And as a result of this, with the secrecy that is going on, it has become very concerning to me personally, and to a lot of other activists, whether they are people like myself who take a totally peaceful approach, people that I know are a little more apt to be vocal, a little more that tend to be on the radical left, and it's the radical left right now that I have seen especially being targeted by, quote, terrorist investigations. What has been said, and I agree with, is okay, don't spill the beans to the whole general public. I get that. But the fact that Commissioner Fritz is sitting in front of us going, why can't I have this information, is very concerning. Correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is there's a chain of command within the police department. My understanding is the mayor is police commissioner. The fact they're withholding information from you all is distressing, because I am left to wonder. I've had my picture taken. Others that I'm out on the street with have as well. Where is this going? What's being done? Okay, I'm Susie Q civilian. I may never know, but the people who should know are not being told. That is extremely distressing. What a lot of people have touched on as well, we're having massive budget cuts. Kids are looking at having their way to getting to school, to getting an education, getting pulled out from under it. This money could be much better spent. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Newell. I'm a descendant of an investigated McCarthy person. It's my mother who was city treasurer of White Bear Lake, and they put her on the blacklist. So I have a direct experience from the time of 10 years old of what that means. So this kind of issue, to me, is very personal, and it's also, through my own life experience, directly related to me. I'm on several FBI lists still because of my actions against the Vietnam War in the 60s, and I did nothing violent. I did nothing that was unconstitutional, and I feel that this particular task force is a money-driven task force. The intent of it is not to protect the public, but to generate tremendous amounts of money and take it away from educational arts programs. I mean, all the things that we desperately need. I mean, if you want to look at it truthfully, what terrorism is, we are a terrorist country because we are still using oil at a horrible rate. We are burying islands all over the world. And if you look at it from the perspective of what other people in the world think about the United States and its ability to look for oil and its ability to perpetuate it, who are the true terrorists in the world? So what, as far as IQ, too, I thought that was an interesting commentary because animals, we're in the animal kingdom, and the elephants are far more intelligent than we are when an earthquake happens because they disappear. They go up into the hills. They're much smarter than we are. We have to have all these instrumentations. Well, I think it can be well said, your instrumentations on protecting us is not what the problem is. And I'd like it readdressed, the JTTF. My daughter was in the square when that incident happened, and I don't need the JTTF to protect my daughter. I can fully protect her in many other ways by acting as an activist citizen, protecting the constitutional rights of this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Okay, we covered the list of public testimony. I think Chief and Assistant Chief Hendricks, I know there's council questions. I believe there are council questions, so why don't you come back up.
Thank you.
I think I should clarify maybe a misperception. The Police Bureau is not actually a member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. We participate on an as-needed case-by-case basis. And in terms of oversight, the mayor as police commissioner, both Mayor Adams and now Mayor Hales are briefed by me on our involvement in cases involving the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
Thank you. That's an important clarification. And Jason Kafori asked, what have we gained? What do you see as the benefits after 2 years of that collaboration?
Sharing of information about terrorism activities in Portland, collaboration on cases where it's appropriate for our officers to be involved, using resources both that the FBI has and that the Police Bureau have in a collaborative fashion.
Do we get any money from the JTTF for our officers' work on it?
No, I don't believe so.
We accept federal grants.
We accept federal grants as part of our participation in a number of task forces. The FBI will reimburse overtime costs to the city for personnel assigned to investigations in certain situations. In other cases, and not in involving our Joint Terrorism Task Force participation, they would provide vehicles or other support, but they do not do that for our officers in this case.
So if it's not all for JTTF participation, can I get that number as to how much we've been reimbursed for overtime?
Certainly.
That would be very helpful, because I think part of my concern here is as we're making painful budget cuts, can we even afford to have two officers and a lieutenant spending time on this issue? So if I could get that number that we've been reimbursed, and I don't know if I can get any numbers for how much time we've spent as part of the budget process, that is a decision that I am interested in. The mayor was quoted in the recent arrest of Mr. Khan that we were not consulted on that case. Is that correct?
I was not consulted.
You were not consulted. Okay, that's an important clarification.
The FBI did not ask for our assistance in that investigation.
And I hesitate to ask for your inference. Isn't that exactly the kind of thing that we thought we would be getting that information when I said that we should go into collaboration with them so we would know what they're doing in Portland?
I can't get into the details of what information was passed on to us about that investigation, but we were not asked to participate or provide assistance.
So going through to, and I'm not going to ask you some of the questions that I asked last year, although I'd still like to get some of those answers. The League of Women Voters suggests that the Independent Police Review Division Director could regularly review all Joint Terrorism Task Force files. Is that something that would be legal and possible?
The city attorney has access to those files, and that's the oversight component that City Council has proposed through the resolution. I think that's an effective oversight. And, of course, my reporting back to the police commissioner and the mayor also provides that oversight.
But would it be possible does the IPR director have the potential to get clearance?
I would have to ask the city attorney. I do not know the answer to that.
Because, colleagues, part of my concern is that the city attorney is responsible for risk management for the city as well as various other parts of it. I'm not sure that there's anybody who's wholly looking out for the civil rights of the citizens in this case, because the police bureau is cognizant of that, and you've affirmed in the report that you are looking out for that. You're also committed to collaborate with the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
I'm committed to provide resources on a case-by-case basis when I feel it's appropriate for those resources to be committed, and I do take very seriously my responsibility as a police officer to uphold the rights of all citizens and our Constitution.
And I affirm that I believe you do. Another of the suggestions from the League of Women Voters to add a provision allowing at least 2 weeks for a public review. Is that something that could be entertained?
Will be entertained.
Thank you. So the suggestion from the ACLU was to keep a log so that sometime in the future there could be a five-year or a cumulative impact assessment. Is that something that you might be willing to do?
It is. Again, our participation is very limited with the cases, and it is important that we not divulge information that might allow people to understand the pace and tempo and the work assignments. We have very few resources committed to that collaboration.
You could perhaps, after 5 years, tell us the previous, like in 2017, you could tell us the 2012 numbers, perhaps.
It would be up to the mayor at that point as police commissioner to delegate that to direct us to do that.
And do you know if the city attorney keeps a log of how many requests, how many meetings they have with the staff assigned to the collaboration?
I don't know. I think Dave Warbrill is still here. He may be able to answer that.
Could I get an answer to that, please?
Make regular visits and some spontaneous visits when I get calls on different subjects.
but and you have records of when you've met with people?
Not, I don't keep a formal log, no. We could put it together, I suppose, from my calendar and some other sources in my memory.
And from now on, you could do so if we asked you to? Thank you. And then my final question from the ACLU is to whether we could make the training curriculum available to the public.
I don't see why not.
No, it's quite straightforward. It's certainly.
Thank you.
Yes, I have really a question, a sort of a basic question for the council members that were here, other than Commissioner Novick and I, when this April 2011 resolution was passed, and that is, you know, are we getting the kind of information that you intended when that resolution was passed?
And from my perspective, the answer is no. That part of why I voted for it was that I hoped we would get more information on what the JTTF is doing here in Portland, and that whether I know it or not, at least you would know it. And I don't know whether you said you didn't know about the recent investigation. That's of great concern to me.
I mean, Mayor, since you posed the question, I deeply respect the fact that a lot of people have come before us today and have, in essence, urged us in the question before us is whether to accept the report or not. And a number of people have come before us saying, go revisit our original decision, and it was flawed. And that was the position many people took then and now, and I respect that. But the question is whether we accept the report. And the thing that I'm not clear about is as I listen to Commissioner Fritz's questions, is whether we have a problem with the report or a concern with the underlying resolution. Now, my recollection is, in trying to strike a balance, the council unanimously adopted a resolution which provided that two individuals would seek a particular enhanced security level. That's the police chief and the commissioner in charge, who by tradition has been the mayor. And that we would have an additional protection of the city attorney's office reviewing, and I think that meant some level of security clearance. It was not my recollection that it was our intention that everybody in the council would seek some kind of security clearance and duplicate what the commissioner in charge was supposed to do as sort of the watchdog on this. Chief, would you like to respond to that?
Again, I work directly for the mayor as police commissioner on this. I briefed the mayor and did so with Mayor Adams on all of our investigative collaboration with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. So there, the mayor has, I think, a keen awareness of our participation in investigations.
But again, the point is, and again, I'm not discounting concerns that have been raised, but the resolution provided a chain of command and a system of oversight. We did not debate and argue at the time that every member of council should seek a certain enhanced level of security and function in concert with the commissioner in charge. We delegated that function. Is that correct?
That is my recollection.
So the question today is a narrow question. It is the information in the report consistent with what the council requested? And I believe last year one of the concerns you expressed to us was that a different level of detailed analysis would have the effect potentially of compromising investigations. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Again, our participation is very limited. We have two officers assigned from the Criminal Intelligence Unit to participate on a case-by-case basis. We have had very little interaction with the Joint Terrorism Task Force over the past year. I've briefed the mayor and Mayor Adams when we did participate in any investigations. The limited resources that we have, if we were to provide a greater detail of information, might enable people to determine what those investigations are and what our interaction with the FBI is on those
now, what
sensitive
I hear,
investigations.
What I hear Commissioner Fritz saying is that she would prefer an additional level of safeguard where she could have access to information and make her own independent judgment. Is there any reason under our underlying resolution that the opportunity to obtain a higher level of security could not be extended to any other member of the council who sought it?
I would have to defer to council and the FBI on that question. It wouldn't be something that I would put forward, the FBI makes a decision about who is appropriate for clearance to their information.
But understand, I think what we have here in part is a little bit of a catch-22, because I have a colleague saying, I would prefer to have more information to make my own assessment. At the same time, the resolution is very intentional about providing information to people that have an enhanced level of security. And so, and that was unanimously supported by the council. So, Dave, you want to comment on that?
As I said earlier in my testimony, clearance isn't necessary to be able to evaluate whether or not the goals of council are being met. It's a confidentiality question. And with intelligence functions, that's always the tension in a democratic society. How do you maintain an effective intelligence function while still managing it and having it be transparent enough that you can manage it and be assured that it isn't running afoul of your goals? So it's not the clearance, it's the confidentiality.
Okay. So Dave, you're in the city attorney's office. What level of security clearance do you have?
I have none.
Okay. So you're bound by a confidentiality agreement?
Yes, and my ethical obligations to the city.
And Chief, what you have secret clearance?
I have a secret clearance.
And is that part of a compromise? Because I remember there was discussion about whether you'd have to have top secret to participate. Did we end up resolving it so that you could participate on an as-needed basis with secret clearance?
Absolutely. Again, because our officers are not assigned full-time to the Joint Terrorism Task Force, none of them have top secret clearance. And so I have the same clearance level as all of our officers who participate in these investigations.
And Mayor Hales, are you in the process of seeking secret clearance as well?
Not yet, but that's, I believe I'm eligible, but we have not yet applied.
So at the current time, are you simply bound by the confidentiality agreement?
That's right.
I just say on the question of whether more than one member of the council could have the opportunity to get the briefings that the commissioner in charge has, That's a question that I'm interested in learning more of and taking up. I don't believe it is essential we resolve that today as part of accepting a report. Nor am I convinced that actually provides a meaningful safeguard, because there's many things that we delegate of equally important significance, and I'm not convinced that having five versus one take responsibility and then certifying to the council is an improvement. But the question's been framed, and I'm certainly interested in learning more about that.
Well, from my perspective, I think this report is very responsive to the resolution we passed. It's, you know, line by line, paragraph by paragraph. And as probably the one council member, although we all unanimously supported this product, and I give Mayor Adams a lot of credit for his work to bring everybody together, including me, as someone who, you know, has believed that we should be a full participant in the Joint Terrorism Task Force, I think this compromise, where we're not, except on a case-by-case basis, is a good compromise. And I feel that, and I know the ACLU supported this compromise as well. I know they wished for more information to be in this report, but I have to agree that there's some point where, you know, you can't put everything in a report and without compromising sort of the basic thrust of what a confidential investigation, secret investigation is. And I don't recall any discussion about other council members other than the commissioner in charge having any kind of special clearances. I just don't recall that. I don't know if we talked about it. But so I find this report responsive.
Okay.
Steve,
do you have other questions, comments?
Yeah. Chief, I am curious as to why you think it would compromise your ability to fight terrorism if you did include the kind of information the ACLU is suggesting. Like, what would be the problem if you said we participated in 23 investigations and 12 of them involved religious extremist organizations, 6 of them involved Unitarians, you know, 4 Greek Orthodox, 2 Russian Orthodox, and there were also 11 political extremists, and 6 of them were anarchist groups and 5 of them were right-wing groups, and 11 of these were assessments, and 8 were preliminary investigations, and 3 were full investigations. What would be the problem with providing that kind of information?
That would be a very detailed amount of information that would allow people, because of the number of resources and the limited number of resources we have, I think people could then determine where those resources were being applied and potentially compromise sensitive investigations.
But how exactly? If we're just sort of those general categories, what would happen?
I think if I discuss that in council, it might actually provide information about how those investigations would be compromised.
Is it that if you gave the types and you were somebody who wasn't involved in one of those types was doing terrorism would say, okay, I'm getting away with it? Or, I mean, can you give some indication of why it would compromise the investigations?
We have very limited resources applied to these investigations. We do very few investigations. And if you were to follow the track of the investigation through that process, you would be able to determine potentially what we were investigating or what the FBI was investigating.
What? I mean, what purpose do you think? Do you think that this report really serves much of a purpose?
It complies with the council resolution that allowed our participation on a case-by-case basis.
But, I mean, doesn't this, in effect, just sort of say, we're complying with the resolution? And, I mean, since there's hopefully there's an understanding that you would comply with the resolution, so do you think there's really a point to having to come before us every year and say, we're still complying with the resolution?
That was council's direction, and I believe that there is an oversight component to it. That the mayor and the city attorney can speak to as well, that they have knowledge of the investigations that we participate in and the oversight processes in place.
Well, can I also just add, I mean, the purpose of a public forum is also to allow advocates, advocacy groups, individual citizens, lawyers, legal advocacy watchdog groups to come and tell us they have evidence that we have not been faithful to the resolution or to its implementation. And that is one reason to have a public forum.
But Commissioner Fish, could we have the public forum without having a report that seems like it will just say the same thing every year?
You know, Steve, I think the council walked a fine line. I mean, these are difficult questions. Some the chief has persuaded me we should not air publicly about methods and means because of the limited participation. But I think this is fair game for the council to debate. I do think a public forum with people having a chance to express their misgivings about the original action, our implementation, and to provide direct and substantive evidence of any claim violation of this agreement is useful. I have in the time I've been involved with this, no one has come before us on a public forum and said I have specific evidence of some misdeed, but I would think that under this resolution, but if they did so, I think they are entitled to have a forum where they can present that evidence.
Chief, by the way, I want to apologize to you and actually to Dave Pedenke for not having asked these questions in advance of this discussion, and I hope we'll have a discussion before next year on these topics, because I would like to have a further discussion about why you think any of those details would compromise investigations, and also Mr. Pedenke as to why the ACLU thinks that this particular information would be the particular information they asked for would be useful.
And again, I think there's value in us coming before council with the report because you have the opportunity to question me and the city attorney about compliance with the oversight mechanisms. And certainly, as you can see in the resolution, if officers brought forward to the city attorney concerns about violating state law, that would have been highlighted in the report.
Okay, further questions, discussion, any further response from what you heard here today other than what the council's already covered? If not, then prepared to hear a motion for the resolution.
Move to accept the report.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Fritz.
Well, thank you for bringing this report to council. I do think it's a helpful discussion, and I appreciate your affirmation of that the police are doing as we expected them to do. A note for my colleagues who were not here 3 years ago that I did have different expectations for the report than is in it. That wasn't specifically voted on. And I feel that I was expecting and hoping for more information, which we had a discussion about this last year. We had another one. various issues are raised, and I'm interested in what the mayor will move forward on that. Intrigued by the suggestion that I could apply for a secret clearance and would be worth doing it just to find out whether I would get it or not, having participated in a 56-day strike on multiple civil actions in Portland. But that wasn't something that was discussed before. I am concerned not about the police or the Portland police's actions in conjunction with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. I'm concerned that we didn't know that they were acting, looking into one of our citizens' actions just very recently. That doesn't go to what I was expecting when we agreed to do this collaboration. I'm concerned that there's a history of the FBI and the federal government not respecting human rights and civil rights, and in particular being discriminatory against Japanese Americans, which we heard about, against our Muslim brothers and sisters, against all kinds of people who are peaceably demonstrating and peaceably assembling and doing things that we as Portlanders particularly are apt to do. So I don't have to accept this report, and I don't know.
Fish.
When we took up this question of the proper role of the city in connection with the Joint Terrorist Task Force, we had what I thought was one of the best and most thoughtful debates on any subject. And I, at the outset, thought it was highly unlikely we'd have 5 votes in support of a compromise. The testimony that I recall was from some groups that thought we should be full participants and others who thought we should not participate at all. And we had very profound debates in this chambers about civil liberties, about the extent of terrorist threats, about public safety. We had a U.S. attorney at the time that spent a lot of time in with each of us explaining his concerns. We had advocacy groups led by the Lawyers Guild and the ACLU and others who spent a lot of time sharing their concerns. And I was actually proud of the compromise we reached. And we took a lot of heat for that compromise. As I said, there were people who thought it didn't go far enough and people who thought it went too far. But there was a sincere effort, I felt then and now, to strike a balance between protecting public safety and protecting civil liberties. One of the gentlemen who testified earlier and is a sharp critic of our approach said that there is terrorism in the world and there is violence. And so we did not begin this exercise frivolously. We did it out of a concern that we protect people's lives, that we protect public safety. But we do so in a way that was unique, that was different than the other 57 cities. And we did strike a balance. And I remember a ferocious debate nationally about what Portland was doing and whether we were somehow the oddball out of a national approach to dealing with this question. And we did it differently, and we came up with a compromise as needed. The question before us today is not whether that was the right approach. I've not heard anyone on this council seek to revisit that question. The question today is the report faithful to what the council directed? And I believe it is. Now, I take very seriously the concerns that are raised by my friends in the civil liberties community that while they don't have documented evidence of abuses under this agreement, they are concerned that there aren't enough safeguards. And so that I share that concern. We have a new mayor who is seeking a clearance. We have a new mayor who can take a fresh look, and I would urge Mayor Hales to do that. My hope is he will keep the police bureau, and as I think a mayor should. And I would hope that you take this opportunity, Charlie, to take a fresh look at this reporting system with the police chief and perhaps even engage some of the advocacy community and see whether there are some things that we can agree on. I think those conversations are best done in other settings where certain kinds of information can be shared. It's a little more awkward here, and I hope the public understands there's some things we are counseled not to discuss publicly because they could compromise investigations. That said, I believe this report satisfies the council's requirements, but if the sense of the council is they want to revisit what those requirements are, I think that should be taken up at another time. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
So I'd like to say, first of all, that I commend the members of the council who approved this method the substantive method of the city engaging with the FBI to investigate criminal acts of terrorism. or potential criminal acts of terrorism, just like the city should participate with the FBI in investigating other criminal acts. I don't have an issue with that, and I thought that the process, the conclusion, was very impressive. As to this report, I feel that the police are put in a rather difficult position in that you're supposed to provide a report on participation in the JTTF while feeling that you can't give anything but extremely limited information without compromising investigations. What I'm saying is not meant to be a criticism of the police, but I think that the report itself is problematic and is currently constituted will simply be a source of ongoing frustration to everybody. Because basically what it says is we're complying with the resolution, with the rules that were set on the city of participation, with participate in the JTTF. So I don't really know what purpose it will serve to continue to have a report that will say the same thing every year. So what I like to see in the next year is a discussion of should we get rid of the report and maybe replace it with a public forum where people air their concerns about participation in the JTTF, or is it possible to have a report with more detail? So that's the discussion that I hope we have over the next year. Because I realize this is a very serious subject, but I can't resist saying that Mark Twain once wrote that when he was a boy, he started a diary, and he looked back at it after a while and saw that every day it said the same thing. Got up, washed, went to bed. And I don't think that there's a point to having a report in JTF that reads like that. So having said that, and with the understanding that, I mean, my vote here is not meant as a criticism of anybody, just sort of a frustration with the form of this report. There's one more thing I'll say before I vote, which is, Greg Cafori, I'm deeply disappointed that you did not reuse the line you used in this issue a year and a half ago at a public forum, which was, if the FBI has changed so much, why is it so called the J. Edgar Hoover Building? Now, I personally hope that FBI has improved in the last 40 years, but it was such a good line that I think you should reuse it whenever possible. So having said that, I vote nay on accepting the report.
Else?
I first of all want to thank the council and everyone here for a thorough discussion. And we've had at least one forum here this morning, and we will have more because these are important questions. I think some of you know that I come to the question of the relationship between the city of Portland and the FBI with some history and with a deep skepticism about that relationship. And that skepticism remains. And I also want to take to heart the comments that have been made here today about how I, as the commissioner in charge of the police bureau, should and will take a fresh look at both this resolution and at this reporting format, and at the larger questions that still, to me, remain about whether it's wise, good public policy, and cost-effective for the Portland Police Bureau to be engaged in this work with the FBI. I want to restate my point. I am very skeptical of the prospect of entanglement of our police bureau, which should and is focused on peacekeeping in our community with the work that the FBI does in addressing global terrorism. I'm skeptical of that relationship. That doesn't mean that we will have none, but it means that we approach it very cautiously. I want to be respectful of the work that the previous council did and the fact that the council did get to a unanimous resolution that set in motion today's report. I want to be respectful of that work and step carefully into this review of how we're doing this. But I think for today and for this report of last year's work, I'm prepared to accept it and give everyone the assurance that I and the rest of this council, all of whom believe deeply in civil liberties and in a police bureau that is focused on both a climate of trust with our citizens and on public safety in our community, that that work will continue. Thank you all for a good discussion. Aye. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Next item.
Next item is 253, amend the Arts Education and Access Income Tax Code to add a definition for income-earning resident and include in the definition that a resident must have an income of at least $1,000 to be considered income-earning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. I'm Thomas Lanham. I'm the Director of the Revenue Bureau. There are two items before you today. One is a resolution. The other is an ordinance. I'll speak to both briefly in the order they appear on the agenda. So the ordinance, I'm sorry, before I get going, I think there's a technical matter we want to take care of. In your packet, there is a substituted language for the budget portion of the ordinance, and it's a technical change to make sure that we move the appropriation to happen in the bump rather than today. And so I'll ask that a member of council move that change unless there are questions.
Second.
Any further discussion on the motion to substitute the new language?
Well, I do have some questions about it, but I'm willing to vote to put it as part of the substitute. And I'll let you make your presentation, then I'll ask some questions.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Roll call on the substitute.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. Substitute ordinance is in front of us.
Thank you. So the ordinance before you today amends the Arts Education and Access Income Tax Code, that's PCC 5.73, to include a new definition of income earning resident and to exclude from that income, from that definition rather, anyone making under $1,000 income of any type. We had previously circulated a report, which I also believe is part of your packet, that discusses the impacts of this change. I'll be brief about the impacts. Excluding income from under $1,000 for purposes of this tax will result in approximately 7,000 to about 20,000 taxpayers no longer having to pay the tax. And the income, the revenue impact of that change is in the range of $277,000 to $700,000. The range is so big and can't be narrowed any further because the data necessary to narrow that range is simply unavailable. The IRS, the Oregon Department of Revenue, there is no information about individual income earners below certain thresholds for reasons of not having a filing requirement principally. So the Bureau had to look to a range of other data sources to gather that information, and that's why you've got such a broad range in terms of the impact. Another impact is that one-time expenses will increase by approximately $140,000. The bulk of that is printing and distribution to make sure that everyone's that has filed or will file incorrectly or to be able to seek a refund. Those sorts of activities can begin. We do expect many more tens of thousands of taxpayers to file between now and April 15th that might not be cognizant of the changes that are occurring here, and we can't give them notice of said changes until after they're finally approved by your second reading next week. So we can talk more about the impacts as far as the budget is concerned. I'm happy to talk more about that in a moment. That's a one-time increase in budget. The one-time budget is currently capped at $500,000, and because we're projecting to underspend that budget by about $40,000, the ask today in terms of the increased budget is $100,000 net.
So $600,000 total for first-year startup admin?
Correct. So okay. What we're asking for is $500,000 was the cap of the one-time expenses before, and today we need $600,000 because of the changes that we're considering.
And that's in addition to 5% of gross revenues for admin? Or
5% of gross is the ongoing number.
Ongoing number.
You're right, right. And I was just going to speak a little bit to the impact around that. This change, as I said before, will result in a reduction of revenue. And so because expenses are a function of revenue, that is to say 5% of revenue is the expense cap, it also has the consequence of reducing the amount of expenses that the Bureau can administer this change with. So that said, we've done some projections around what the new cash flows look like, and we believe that we will remain under the cap on a going-forward basis. However, I do need to caution the Council that if there are any further unexpected decreases in revenues or increases in expenses, that cap is now threatened because any contingency space we had on a going-forward basis is largely being impacted by today's
Thomas, the 5% cap on administrative expenses by law is calculated on the basis of gross revenue over a 5-year period.
That's correct.
So the the challenge here is that we may not get an accurate picture whether we're within the five until the end of the five. We can project and we can check this annually, but the measure adopted by the voters said you look at a five-year average, correct?
That is correct.
And so does that technically mean that you could go above or below 5% at any time during the 5 years, as long as at the end of 5 years the average stays below 5?
Yes, it does. So in 1 year you might have 6%, and the other 4%, as long as you're hitting the 5% average. Obviously, from a good faith and optics perspective, we would prefer to stay under 5% every year, including especially the first year if we can.
Yeah, I believe this language that was in the ballot was taken straight from the Portland Children's Levy, which also limits administrative expenses to 5% or less, and we do that over a five-year period as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have met or 5% or less pretty much every year, although 1 year I think we were like 5.02%, but over the average, 5% or less. So this language, I think, came straight from the Children's Levy.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, our goal will be to be under 5% every year, but this does give us the latitude that we need, and, of course, that was approved by the voters, as you mentioned, Commissioner. So, and then I'll speak just briefly to the resolution. It's sort of a separate matter. The council is directing the Revenue Bureau to review the entire structure of the tax, and the Bureau would do that, of course, in close collaboration not only with your offices but also with the Office of Equity and Human Rights. One of the impacts of that is that because there may be significant changes, we are not able to enter into a partnership this year for tax year 2013 with vendors such as TurboTax. And we had modeled our compliance rates on the assumption that from tax year 13 forward, which is due April 15th of 2014, that we would have that relationship in place and that would assist us greatly in terms of compliance and making sure that it's very easy for taxpayers to file. So that effort will be delayed by 1 year as a result of this review. And so the cash flows change in some of the out years. The net, the final net number over the five-year window is about the same, but it moves monies from 1 year to the next in terms of the projection. So I will end my remarks there and ask if anyone has questions, and certainly will remain in chamber until after the item is completed.
Questions at this point? Great. Thank you both. Do we have anybody sign up?
We have 7 people signed up.
Okay.
Would you come up? The first 4, David Wind, Anita Yap, Eric Fruits, and Stephen Mark Bowden. I believe that's the last name.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, David. You can be on first.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. I'm David Wind. I'm the Deputy CFO and Budget Director for Portland Public Schools. And I'd just like to start by thanking you for your history of support for schools in Portland. As budget director, we are, like school districts across the state, in the midst of developing our budgets for next year. I am happy to be able to say for the first time in 10 years that someone in a position of authority in this state has actually proposed to increase the level of state funding as a share of the state budget this year. So that does mean that some of the tenor of conversations about budgets for schools has changed. In Portland this time last year, we were looking at a substantial reduction in our budget and eliminating 110 positions in our schools, and that was only averted at the last minute as a result of a 3-way agreement between the City Council, the Portland Association of Teachers, and the school district that provided one-time funding that reinstated those positions into schools. And that's just one example of the city's partnership with and investment in schools, which we are enormously grateful for. So when we start the budget process this year, we're looking at, you know, backfilling that one-time money. The level of funding proposed by the co-chairs of Ways and Means at the state legislature gives us some stability when we look at next year in comparison to this year, even after taking account of that one-time money. One of the key components of providing that stability for Portland is the funding that comes for teachers in schools. So the projections that we have using the 500 to 1 ratio is that about 45 teachers in Portland schools next year, Portland Public Schools, would be funded with proceeds of this arts education and access tax. And that's a significant